Hello and welcome back to You, Me and the Big C with me, Laura Mahn, aka Girl Versus Cancer, and Deborah James, aka Bow Babe. And I'm sure you will all know we are missing one vital ingredient to this pod, and that is our lovely Rachel Bland of Big C, Little Me. And today's pod is going to be talking about our age, talking about the last week and how we've been going through the motions, Deb, really, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And try and do justice to our wonderful, wonderful friend.
Yeah, as many of you who are probably new to our podcast, A, thank you very much for listening. And B, you know, sadly, you have been brought to the podcast because Rach died. And I am going to use that word because that's what she wanted us to say. She died yesterday, leaving behind loads of friends and family, and obviously her beloved Steve and Freddie. And I think we, over the last, you know, 48 hours have absolutely 24 hours been kind of talking about Rach and what she means to us. And I'm hoping that we can do her a bit of justice. It does feel weird, doesn't it?
It does feel weird. I'm choked already.
Are you?
Yeah.
We promise not to cry.
Well,
shall we start with what happened? So in terms of where we
let you know, because we were privy to this, weren't we? A few days before you guys were. We got a message, was it last week, Wednesday?
Yeah, we got a message. So I think all of us had been speaking to her. Do you know, actually, Loz, we are supposed to be recording our pod today. Yeah, so we had it scheduled in. And I last spoke to Rach on Wednesday last week. And I think we all kind of at a similar time. And she'd just come down to London. And I think she came down to see somebody and another person at the Marsden. And I think she knew because she called me and she knew it wasn't great. And she went home. We were supposed to meet actually that day for a drink.
Yeah.
And she went home and the next day we received a message. We have a WhatsApp group between you know, us gang, our podcast gang, don't we?
Actually, I saw a picture on her Instagram stories. I'd just gone on holiday. I messaged the group, didn't I? And I said, can I please go on holiday? Because there's so much happens with treatments and stuff. I wasn't sure if I could. And I think I was in Malaga less than 48 hours. And I saw a picture of her in hospital. She'd put something up.
Yeah.
She was back in hospital. And I was like, what have you gone and done now? Her response was, don't worry about me. Just a few tests. Please go and enjoy your holiday. And we made some banter about getting my maracas out. And how that was going to be the next slogan on a Girl Versus Cancer tea. And then I think it was like the day later.
Yeah, it was 7 o'clock in the morning the following day. And I'm just going to read it to you and I don't think Rachel will mind. She sent this to Mike, Al, Lauren and myself, who will work on You, Me and the Big C. And she said, it breaks my heart to have to do this to you guys, but there will be no more pods from me. I can't take calls yet as too broken, but this moment happened yesterday. I'm sorry I couldn't manage your £850 bottle of wine. Basically, I had a deal with her. And it's a random story that I basically snogged a guy and got a really expensive bottle of wine. And I don't know when to open it. It was kind of, it's one of those moments. It's been sitting in my cupboard and I don't know what it is. And I've always said to Rach, right, Rach, if you're going to pop your clogs, love, I'm bringing that bottle and we're going to crack it open on your bedside. And she sent us a picture of her drinking some champagne. And she said, I've been sent home and I've been told that I've got days left. I've got a lot of death admin to do.
Yeah.
So obviously in her organised way, she went off and she did some death admin. Now, over the weekend, obviously this wasn't public, but the team, the podcast family, as we like to call ourselves, I think all of us individually have had to say our goodbyes. And it's been incredibly hard, hasn't it, Loz?
Yeah, I think it's just, I don't feel like I'd actually said the words goodbye. But we have exchanged messages. I basically said to her, "Oi, you, I leave you alone for 2 days and you go dying on me. How selfish." And she sent this back. I know. Look what happens when I'm left unattended. She was like, I seriously didn't want to spoil your holiday. promise me you make my funeral. I want you and Debs in fabulous black and seeing and speaking if you felt up to it. I love you loads. That basically is one of the last things. Oh no, I'll tell a lie. I got very drunk that night and sent her a message at 4 o'clock in the morning that said that you'll have to bong this mic. I love you. Just so you know, I'm thinking about you. And then I sent her a RuPaul's Drag Race meme of Aja saying, you're perfect, you're beautiful, you look like Lisa Evangelista, you're a model, because she did. And she put, I love you too. I've told work, I want you girls to carry on the podcast. We've done too much to leave it behind. You know your stuff now. Aww. And that's
so is, I feel, I mean, yeah. I'm going to read some stuff later, but I feel really emotional about this whole process, but yeah. mainly because Rach kind of brought us to the table, didn't she?
She did.
So she had an idea for this podcast, kind of Christmas last year. Mm. And I remember her reaching out and kind of saying, I've got this idea, but I'm not sure people are going to go for it. I'm not sure it's kind of, you know, going to work. However, well, no. Other people said that they weren't sure it was going to work. Rachel knew it was going to work. And I think she took the idea to Jono, who's the controller of Five Live. And I'm not sure. I think I've now heard his response. Did you hear the recording the other day? I think his response was like, yeah, it's not going to work. And then he had to eat his words. And he said some really, really lovely things yesterday in a tribute to Rach. But essentially, she had this idea and she wanted to put cancer on the main stage. She wanted to take it from a corner and put it out. Mm-hmm. And for me, that kind of she did that by finding us. And we have no experience in broadcasting.
We have zero experience. I think the closest I've come to broadcasting is bloody Instagram stories, and I talk to people all the time. But I think what it was is each in our own individual ways. We have become friends online, but we all champion the conversation.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's what she may have seen in us and gone, well, if someone's going to talk about it, these girls aren't going to shy away.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I'm forever grateful to her for doing that.
Yeah. The thing that I find amazing, we talked about this on our first podcast. Mm. We first met on the train.
We met on the train.
Yeah, and then
you slightly dishevelled, running for it, as per usual.
As per usual. And then we first met Rach in the recording studio. We were just outside and that was the first thing. And then we kind of, the first time we really had a face-to-face chat, even though we were kind of like besties before, was in the studio when we recorded our first podcast.
It was.
It was quite a leap of faith, wasn't it?
It was a massive leap of faith. And I don't think any of us were prepared for the magic. But I'm going to call him Magic Mike, even though we call him the Bear. he's our podcast dad and our podcast brother, Al. And they are as much a part of the podcast as we are. And they make things happen. Al with his vidding skills, top vidding skills.
I think of Al as the uncle.
Al's an uncle.
Yeah,
pervy uncle.
Why perv?
It's all the videoing you do of us, mate. It's all the spying.
Yeah, but I know these, a few of those.
These are the voices of the pod that you never hear. And I know that these guys have a lot to say about their Rachel. And we're bringing them in now to have a chat.
Well, I just
you right, lads?
Hello. This seems weird, me talking and everyone hearing. but basically, I just want to say, just go back to what Deborah said. Rachel, basically, Rachel had this idea. She'd written it all out. Of course she had. She writes everything out, right? She's organised and she was brilliant at that. And Rosina, who's the news editor at Five Live, just had a quiet word with me and said, look, you know, Rachel wants to do this podcast. Would you have a chat to her about it? So I do various other podcasts. So I sat down with Rachel and she had a plan, right? And she's a brilliant broadcaster. She'd never podcast before. So we just talked about how podcasting can work and blah, blah, blah. It's funny, actually. Steve sent a message last night and it really got me thinking about when we started this podcast and some of the things that me and Rach talked about. She had a list and she said to me, there was five or six names maybe on the list. I can't quite remember. And at the top of the list was Deborah and Lauren. And she said to me, she said, oh, I'm just really worried. I really want Deborah and Lauren to say yes, because I really want to do it with them. I think it'll be brilliant. And I was like, well, yeah, well, let's, you know, get in touch and everything. And she said, yeah, well, I'll let you know with what they say. So I get these messages. Yes, Deborah's in. Yes, Lauren's in. Brilliant. Right. Now, you guys might remember this. Let's do a phone call, you know, conference call. Do you remember? And I remember I stood outside my house when we did it. And we did this conference call and I didn't really say that much. I let you guys all talk. I just wanted to hear you guys talk it. And I knew from about 4 or 5 minutes in, less than that, that this was going to be amazing. Oh. And after the phone call, Rachel called me straight away and said, what do you think? And I went, let's do it. Let's do it. And the remarkable thing about this podcast, I've done a lot of stuff. Usually when you're doing something like this, you pilot a show, right?
Yeah.
Now, And me and Al just realised this the other day. We never piloted.
No,
right?
No. I thought about that. I thought, that's a bit bonkers, isn't it?
No, we came up. We did About Us. We sat in the studio that me and Al are in now. Not in Rachel's chair, by the way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We...
Cut you like a fish.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm sitting opposite and it's like she's glaring over the computer at me, as she often did. But no, she's... And we did this and it was just magical. And afterwards, like you rightly said, we all sat around talking in the studio once the mics were off. And you guys just dropped it into conversation, going, "Oh, we've never been in the same room before." And I was so annoyed with Rachel. Rachel, why didn't you tell me that? Like, that is phenomenal. So do you remember we recorded extra lines, and I dropped it into that first pod. I couldn't believe it.
Mike was so, he really was quite angry, because like, we're behind the glass, so we've not got microphones.
No,
with
you
us.
Just he's scowl
like,
at us.
I cannot believe, why didn't they say this at the start? But as well as Mike being asked about that as far as ideas, they're like, "Oh, there's a little bit of digital starting with this new podcast, You, Me and the Big C." I was like, "Oh, okay, well, I'll just pop in and watch the recording." The first moment, like we said, that I couldn't believe that you guys had never met before that first episode, but I was in so much. I was like, I am in this. I'm giving it everything. I don't care how much day-to-day work I've got, because this isn't my day-to-day job.
It's extracurricular. Yeah.
We're your projects, right?
it's a family. I mean, we've said it so much. I can't stress enough. We are a family, and it came across yesterday reading through Twitter and all the messages about Rach and about how brilliant the podcasting. I was hooked from first episode. The great things that you girls do and have done means so much to so many people, and for me and Mike, you've got us hooked. You know, it really is a family, and I think that's one of the things that we all want, is to normalise talking about cancer. At first, again, when I was asked, I was like, "Oh, cancer, that's going to be tricky," and then hearing you girls talk about it, it was like, God, it's, you make it sound so easy, and you make it sound so open and inclusive, and I'm not surprised it got to number one. And I just hope that this continues to snowball. But Rach was just nails. You know, she was.
Yeah.
She prepped all of us. She kept propping us all up. What are we bloody doing? Yeah. Why are we getting emotional? Rach is going through it. That's just the strength of her character. And that's my bit on Rach.
How many times, Al, behind that glass? You guys never hear what we say behind the glass. Sometimes that's quite good, but...
most of the time that's probably brilliant, isn't it? Bloody hell, it's like herding cats again. Isn't that your sentence, Mike?
Yeah, herding cats. But one of the things that we always said just about Rachel was, this girl is made of iron. Mm. And we said it, we must have turned to each other.
She's nails.
She's nails. She's just, for me personally, she was just the most incredible person. And I know we all do, but I just feel so lucky to have helped her.
Mm. Same.
God, do you know, I just feel like there's so much pressure on me to stay alive now.
Yeah, Deb, like, you can't just be me in the big sea.
That's what I'm thinking.
Please don't.
Really
just give me at least 6 months, mate. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Otherwise, I'm going to end up with Alan Mike up with me the whole time. Don't leave me with these two.
I'll make it impossible. If I go, I'll be like, "Well, Rach wanted Jennifer Aniston." Yeah, I'll be like, "Right, who am I having?
Greg Wise.
I was just sat there, first time listener. Obviously, I've known Rach for a while at Five Live, but you guys had never met you before. And I thought it was brilliant. And I couldn't believe that in that hour, that was the first time you'd spoken and met in person, because it was all there. It was years of friendship kind of just laid out in front of us.
Yeah, we'd spoken so frequently, haven't we? That's why.
I think it was also the first time I'd gone into a studio. So me too. I was like a child going, "What does this button do?"
Rachel was like, don't touch that.
Rachel was like our mum saying, "You don't do that. You need to sit still."
I think that was probably the world record bong episode as well, because I hadn't quite kind of mastered the fact that you do not swear when you're next to a microphone.
Like, what she kept on doing was like, because she doesn't say anything, she just gives a glance. And the glance is like, "Oh,
she does
children."
She always does that thing when you know she's about to talk, because she has the pen in her hand. She kind of raises it a bit. And you're like, "All right, the Queen's about to speak."
One of the things I remember when we first started talking about it, and I was just talking about, the differences of podcasting. And she was an amazing, we all know she was an amazing broadcaster.
Oh, so
and she did most of her work on live radio, right? And on live radio, what you do is you look at a clock. because you've got items ahead, and you know, you're looking to hit all the items. And Rachel was a consummate professional at doing that. So I said to her, do you remember this? I said, yeah. I kept saying to her, I said to her when we did that first pod, I said, now if I see your eyes looking at that clock, I'm going to go in this studio and cover it up.
Yeah, you did.
Because Rachel said to me when we were doing it, she said, oh, you know, I think, you know, probably what, about 40 minutes, an hour maybe. And I said to her, Rach, I don't care how long these podcasts are. And she looked at me like, what? And I said, look, let's just do it. Let's just do it and let me edit it afterwards and we'll see what comes out. And I think, you know what, it's funny. And I also, and she won't mind me saying this, I'm sure. I said to her, look, you know, with podcasting, and you are all brilliant at this, you have to open up. Like you have to open up. You, when you're on air, you're a presenter, and you, occasionally you do open up. But when you're a podcaster, and especially with this subject, you know, that was so close to Rachel's heart, and she knew what she wanted to do. She knew what that message was. But I don't want you to be a presenter on this. And I think she found it quite tricky, you know.
Mate, she did, you know. Listen to the first couple of episodes, first two or three, I'd say, Rachel is still very much presenting, isn't she? And she has her running order and she's got all her facts and her figures and, you know, she's seamless in the execution, bringing people in, the links, everything. And then I think it took us to like midway through the series and we all just relaxed into our roles in the pod.
Yeah.
And it was such a nice thing to be a part of because as what was really lovely about Rachel is she was the professional broadcaster out of the three of us, but I never felt like she was because we all did a pod for the first time. We were all in this together and she had this warmth and this kind of encouragement, didn't she?
Yeah, absolutely.
She really did encourage us. She really did. And I don't know. No words, mate. No words.
Yeah. And I just one other thing. I mean, you know, obviously, like you said, Jono said yesterday, and he did. He wasn't sure if this would work. But I have to just give a little bit of a props here to A. Rosina, who is the news editor here. Mm-hmm. And also, and she might not remember, Heidi Dawson, who's also on the management team. And I after that very first meeting with Rachel, I'll be honest with you, I was just going there just to help her. I wasn't going as a producer. And I said to her right at the end, and I remember her laughing, I said, oh, Rach, I said, I'm quite busy, but I'm going to have to do this podcast. I can't give it to anyone else now. I've got to do it. It's too good. And I went away and basically crouched next to Heidi's desk and regurgitated what me and Rachel had talked about in 5 minutes. And at the end of it, she went, we've got to do this podcast.
Oh,
and that was it. And they, and to be fair to Five Live, and I just wanted to say this, they have backed us since then to the hilt.
Yeah, we feel incredibly supported. Yeah. And I think a massive thanks, I reiterate that, like for taking a chance on us. And I think actually I'm hoping that it will encourage others to do the same.
Mm.
And to kind of, you know, say actually sometimes you don't have to bring people to the table that you think have these polished backgrounds in broadcasting or whatever it might be. And sometimes, you know, rough diamonds.
Rough diamonds, Dave. I'd definitely call myself diamonds.
Really rough.
Definitely got face for radio sometimes.
I can't even pretend to lift a pen like Rachel. Yeah, just laugh.
No. Oh, that's what I laugh.
The thing that I find amazing is so obviously we've all had to say our goodbyes, but Rach still made me laugh. I know that Lauren has been reading out some texts. Rach still made me laugh in her final messages to me. To the point that she has made it absolutely clear that I have to wear a black hat and Gucci sunglasses at her funeral, followed by making damn sure that Loz's boyfriend is hot.
Yes, Rach. we're on a mission. Yeah. You, me and the big D continue.
She was so kind of, and she said, I don't want any sad deathbed photographs. And she said, I can't really say this on there. She said, don't do any exclusives because I want the story everywhere.
Is that what she said?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
She is amazing. I honestly, so weird. I was talking about this earlier. Like when she was on Moments on Twitter yesterday, there was a whole Moments dedicated to Rachel. And I was screen grabbing frantically. And I was like, I wanted to send them to her because she would love it. She would absolutely love it. She and I'm just like, oh, mate, and I hope on some level she knows. And I just want to say on behalf of the whole team, a massive thank you to everyone listening for getting us to number one in that pod.
Yeah.
I cannot even begin to tell you, there's not enough words or expressions or adjectives that how much Rach wanted that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And you got, you all gave it to her, and she knew.
She knew before she died.
She knew before she died.
And can I, Steve
can told
I say,
her, and she knew, and she was over the moon.
Yeah.
And can I just say on that? I just wanted to say this on the podcast, just for record. I just wanted to thank someone who you has never done anything for you, me, in the Big C, but is a sort of mate of mine or someone that I've worked with. There's a lad called Chris Stark.
Yes.
Who works on Radio 1.
Radio 1.
And I was a bit emotional on Monday night, I think it was, and I was up, and he just started WhatsApping me. And he said to me, you know, he said, this podcast is incredible, blah, 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 blah. And he was the one that really gave us the idea to get it to number one for Rachel. And he, and I tell you what, just one thing, I've got to say this, right? And he sent me how many people he direct messaged on Twitter. And at the top, do you guys remember Funhouse?
Shut up.
With Pat Sharp.
Shut up.
That was one of the first, and I just, that made me laugh. But I just want to say from all of us, massive thanks to Chris.
Yeah,
because thank you, Chris.
The message that Steve sent us about Rach will always be really special to me. The fact that she saw that and shout and cheered yay.
And it's not just a number one, is it? It's not just about that. It's about the fact that actually people are listening, and when they listen to, we know this because all the episodes have literally shot to the top, haven't they?
Yeah.
And we know that they're not just listening to one, they're listening to more than one. And what we're hoping is by doing that, we are continuing that conversation, right? So we're doing what we set out to achieve. Mm. We want people to talk, and we're hoping that not everybody's who's downloading has cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, that would suck, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, people who don't have cancer are wanting to listen to what life with cancer is like. And I think that's brilliant.
I do as well. I'm really, really proud.
But and Debs, don't kid yourself. Rachel did want it to get to number one.
She did.
She was so annoyed.
I was going to say, she's so bloody competitive, that girl, isn't she?
Yeah.
I think she preferred the term ambitious.
Ambitious. She was so driven. This is the thing about Rachel. She was so driven to do things well.
But she wasn't an... Sorry, boing.
No, she wasn't.
She wasn't. She was very, very headstrong.
She knew what she
determined.
Wanted.
She knew what she wanted.
Yeah.
It was going to happen.
And it was on a list, for sure.
But do you know what, though? There was that's why I wanted to tell you guys about, you know, when we got together, because there was also, there was no ego. There was no ego to Rachel. And in a way, you know, she was a little bit underneath. She was always a little bit anxious and a little bit like, I think she did, but she always never appreciated how loved she was.
No, like, do you know what, Mike? We talked about this earlier, didn't we, on the phone?
Yeah.
One of the things that really struck me with Rach is when we talked about the positives of cancer. And Rach sat there and said, before she got ill, she used to doubt whether people liked her. And I was like, are you having a laugh, mate?
Yeah.
Of course they do. And Steve sent a really lovely message to us once Rachel had died, and just said that, thank you for making my girl realise how special she was. And for me, that is what makes my heart warm, just knowing that we may have had something to do with her feeling loved, accepted and special. And I don't think, I speak on behalf of all, I said enough words for proud.
I think the thing that blew me away is she, you know, in true Rachel fashion, she was always going to send out a final text, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm like, I'm hard.
Yeah,
that's your saying.
That's my
saying. And I don't cry, and I've got tears in my eyes right now, because she chose very strategically. She probably just wanted to. It's either part of it is Rach wanting to get number one, but her final text with the final picture was this. And it was our podcast, and it was us.
Yeah.
And she, on the receiving end, to kind of be the person that you know, sees that, is quite mind-blowing, actually.
Yeah.
And it means a hell of a lot.
And I think for all of us, we'd like, without like getting a bit, but it's going to happen because we're hurting, right?
Yeah.
Rachel is a broadcaster, and she's well-known and loved by everyone. But she was also our friend.
She was our mate.
She was one of my best
friends.
So we're talking about our friend here. And we will talk about grief on the pod, won't we, Deb? Because it's a subject we wanted to cover.
Well, we need a bit of help with it, I think.
We need a glass of wine. And I also have to say, on that day that we did that last bit of BBC Breakfast, and we're all sitting around the table, This is what I mean about our friendship. We're sitting around the table, and on the clip, it shows Rachel like putting her fingers across her face and her nose. In that moment, we were actually discussing hanging gems off of her oxygen mask and how we can make it more fashion. And then, because her ALT levels were so high in her liver, she couldn't drink, so I gave her my wine to sit and sniff. And this is the thing. These are the things that I'm going to miss most. Obviously, yeah. I miss the professional that she was, and everything she's taught me about broadcasting, everything she's taught me about class and about being a professional. But most of all, I'm just going to miss my friend. Yeah. I really miss my friend.
I think the thing, somebody said, describe your relationship with Rachel. And I think there's moments in your life, and I'm sure other people can relate to this, where people come into your life at different points, yeah. don't they? And you then create really intense relationships yeah. with those people in a very short amount of time. So, you know, whether that is at university or with me when I had my kids.
Yeah.
And the way my friends in my life are all built up kind of almost around those events, you know, yeah. and they're quite significant as a point, you know, they all kind of weirdly play different parts in my life. And Rach is my friend that has absolutely got me out of the dark days during cancer. And that's because yeah. she was the first person that I called who told me, she just then tells you to wipe your tears, get on with it, love.
Yeah, she does. And that's the best part about it. And we've heard loads and loads, haven't we, over the last 48 hours, outpourings for Rachel and everything that she meant to so many. I know that Steve and her family are taking great comfort from it all. So thank you so much. And please continue to share. We love it. But we're going to listen in now to some of the tributes that have come from colleagues, friends, anyone who wants to get near a microphone, basically. So we'll listen to that and you can hear a bit more about what Rach meant to everybody.
The controller of Five Live, Jonathan Wall, is here. A huge shock for everybody, Jonathan. And clearly, you know, we have had such a sense in just the last few days. We've known over the past couple of years, and before that, of course, to all of us who knew her, what she has meant and what she has done for so many listeners, Jono, particularly in the last few days, just the outpouring of affection and admiration towards Rachel.
Yeah, it's a very sad day. Rachel was part of the fabric of this radio station. She's worked here for 17 years. In her 20s, she was one of the best newsreaders in the country. She loved working with Richard Bacon, so we put them together on a late show, and she was funny and clever and had to rein in Richard's naughtiness, and she did it brilliantly. And then she wanted to work with Richard on afternoons, and we said, no, you're too important to us. You need to stay on late and make sure Tony starts well on late. And she did that brilliantly. And so in her own right, she was a great broadcaster. But more than that, Chris, I honestly think she's brought the most important pieces of broadcasting about cancer and living with cancer that I've ever heard. And I have a family history of cancer, as many people do. And I remember some very powerful documentaries that Helen Rollison did, the BBC Sport presenter yeah. many years ago, who died, which was pretty groundbreaking documentary coverage at that time. I just think what Rachel and the girls did, and people say to me, why was it so special? I mean, in simple terms, if you put three beautiful personalities who are very interesting together in the room with a good producer and a microphone, they'll create some wonderful radio. Add the purpose of wanting to educate and inform people about cancer, which was really what Rachel's mission was. I mean, when she first came to me, I said, I'm not sure it's going to work.
I'm not sure
there's going to be enough public interest in wanting that. But I mean, it's the biggest success of its type. When the BBC new podcast editor started, he defined it as the best piece of public service broadcasting he's heard for several years. And that was quite a moment for me to hear that, because we were obviously quite close to it. But I think perhaps more than that, it became a more profound piece of work when she knew she was going to die. Because I think for her, the bravery, the great bravery in it is confronting a taboo subject, that she said, we're all going to die, but we don't talk about it. And the danger of that is we left things unsaid. We don't say what we want to say to the people we should say it to. And look, that isn't how everybody is going to want to be when they're ill. And Rachel never wanted to force how she was on anyone else. But I think she certainly wanted to educate and comfort and inform. And she She, you know this, she trained herself up to be an expert on it, didn't she? Because she was going to help herself as much as she could. But I think to do the finest work of your life in the final year of your life is an amazing thing to do.
As we've been talking about how proud she was, and quite rightly so, of her podcast, You, Me and the Big C, and I want you to have a listen to this. It's a very powerful moment when Emma Agnew, Jonathan Agnew's wife, spoke very honestly about her cancer diagnosis.
Off he goes. So we say goodbye, temporary goodbye to Deb's dad. Into the studio walks the beautiful Emma Agnew. Emma, you were diagnosed with cancer last year, and we've been kind of chatting over the last year or so through our treatments. And just tell us a bit about your kind of your history with this and your diagnosis, how it all came about.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any family history at all. I'd had a routine mammogram that was all clear at the beginning of the year last year. Thank you very much. Just noticed a little bit of lack of sensation in a nipple. You know how one kind of pops up and says, hello.
and the other one just went,
really? And I just looked at it and I said to Jonathan, what do you think? And he was like, well, it looked all right to me. But I just kept an eye on it for 6 weeks and finally went to my GP who, you know, very lucky village GP who just said, you know, I can't feel anything, I can't see anything, but you say it's a change. So let's send you off. So off we went skipping to the breast cancer clinic. Sure enough, hour and 10 minutes later, you've got cancer.
Wow.
And it's literally as brutal as that. And they kept looking at me and I'm going, yo, okay. You really get it. You're not leaving here thinking anything other than you've got breast cancer. No, I get it.
I guess it, yeah.
And there's poor old Jonathan, who, of course, had gone skipping in saying, oh, hey, it'll be nothing. You know, it's fine. You know the stats. 99 people, do it's just a cyst or whatever. And poor old boy, he was just virtually on the floor. In fact, he said, I think I might be sick. He wasn't, but the shock, that's like a punch in the guts, isn't it? Yeah. It's an absolute punch.
And Emma Agnew joins us now. Emma, thank you for doing so. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
What difference do you think You, Me and the Big C, the podcast that Rachel was very much front and centre of, made?
I think it's been an absolute game changer for so many people in this country. She just literally opened up that conversation. I must say, you just said passed away earlier. She'd be furious. Three podcasts ago, she talked about death and she said, why do people say we've lost somebody, we've passed on, they've died or they're dying? It is actually using the proper language and talking about it, using the word cancer. An awful lot of people just like to say, oh, they're not terribly well, or they've got a little bit of something the matter with them. Hey, we've got cancer. And the more you talk about it and all the taboos around the intimacy and how it is and how we feel, she just got it out there and she said it. And it became an acceptable, almost a trendy club to be in. Not one you want to be in, but an acceptable one. She was phenomenal, amazing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you've just pointed out, the language is important. The language people choose to use around it is important. And what was great about, you know, your appearance on the podcast, but the three of them together, was just how conversational it was. It wasn't... And she said that to me, you know, she said, look, it's not supposed to be something that's mawkish or depressing in any way. It's supposed to be actually inspiring.
And I think that's exactly what it was. She, right up to that last tweet that she put out about, you know, with the Frank Sinatra quote, that's exactly how she was. She was the first to have a joke. We talked a lot about our bad hair days. She used the cold cap so she didn't lose her hair. I was as bald as a coot. And she'd say, oh, I'm having a bad hair day. And I'd say, hold on, mate, I've got no hair to have a bad hair day with. You know, we just have that sort of laugh. And yet tackling the reality of it, tackling the reality of her fear of leaving her beloved Steve and Freddie. And the amazing thing about the podcast, the one I did with her and Jonathan, was that the men took over the airwaves. The carers took over the airwaves. And Jonathan and I and Steve said afterwards, we'd actually opened up on that podcast about fears that we'd never been brave enough to say face to face. So she really got us talking. And I know her relationship with Steve changed from that day, even better than it was, because they were able to confront the things they had to talk about. When you are facing an illness that could kill you, or sadly, in her case, did kill her. And you have to have those honest, open conversations. You know, it actually makes it easier to cope with.
Emma, thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the special half hour. Rachel Hodges, what's happening out there?
Facebook group membership currently stands at 10,647. Some of the posts from the group tonight. Jean Parnell says, "The shush is my saviour. When him next to me is snoring away, I put in my earphone and an earplug on the other side and join the special half hour club."
And Richard is with us now. Richard, thank you. For joining us here on Five Live, your previous
home. Yeah, I know. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny, it's mixed emotions listening back to that clip, I must say, because, you know, I've spent the last, since Rachel tweeted, I mean, it was literally like a day and a half or 2 days ago that she only had days to live. I've been thinking a lot about the time that we spent together off air and on air, and I thought in particular about that. So the clip you played there was from our late night show on Five Live, and at half midnight, we started this club called the Special Half Hour, and you only knew about, we never promoted it, you only knew about it if you were listening at half 12. And Rachel and I co-presented that together, and she was brilliant at it, as you could hear. And you, in that moment that you played, you can hear her abilities as a broadcaster, because what she was doing there is she was switching from newsreader into entertainment mode, and to change gears like that and go from news reading into something as silly and irreverent as a special half hour is actually something that very few people can do. And what was also nice about that clip is, you know, Nihal, it just reminded you how good she was at what she did. Rachel, she was funny, she was confident, she was clever, she was also very tough, and that's something that you saw when this final challenge was thrown at her. And one of the most interesting things about Rachel, actually, I think, is that, you know, that when this happened, she actually created, I think, the best thing that she's ever done, the best piece of work she's ever done, which is the podcast You, Me and the Big C. And I listened to that, as well as followed her on her comments about what she was going through on social media and the way she shared it with everyone. And I think that podcast has helped change the way that we talk about all of this. But I also don't know how she did it. I don't know how she found the strength and ability to confront this in such an open and frank way and with such humour. And I really do think of her as being an absolutely remarkable person.
But it's not too long ago, Richard, that you were faced with decisions that you had to make about fighting against something that was threatening to take over your body.
Yeah.
And you
yeah,
saw
that,
with her, you know, and you, so in some ways you can identify with that strength that she had, that ability to be able to take what she had been dealt and try and uplift other people. I mean, how difficult is that to be dealing with it yourself and then uplifting other people while you're going through it simultaneously?
I think there's an element when you face something like that of almost gallows humour, and that actually, I think sharing and applying humour to something so bleak and so dark is actually a way of helping you process it. It is by turning it into a story that you share, it becomes, I think, probably slightly easier to manage psychologically. When I was ill, when I was in the hospital over the summer, and you know, there were points where I was dying, Rachel was in touch a lot, and when I was in a coma, she was in touch with my wife Rebecca, and she sent me messages. And she was, you know, she was going through this. And by then, I'm pretty sure she knew that she was facing the end. And yet she was still very concerned about me. And, you know, when I got the all clear, I don't know if this sounds odd or not, I almost felt a certain guilt that I got out of this and that she hadn't.
Chris Warburton said something very poignant at the end of the show at 1 o'clock, Richard, which was that we should all go and hug our loved ones a little bit tighter, because
yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I, another thing I was thinking about this morning when, you know, my old colleagues from Five Live emailed me and told me this news, is I actually remember talking about loved ones. I remember on air on that late night show on Five Live. And by the way, Rachel had a cult following on there. She had fans. who would talk about her obsessively online. People loved her. But I do remember on air that we would joke about her search for love at that time, that she was single. This is like 11 years ago or so. And we would joke about this search for the right partner. And we know that she found that person in her husband, Steve. And no one knew that it would be, you know, so late in the day. And it is so unjust that she didn't get to spend more time with him and to see Freddie, who turns 3 later this month, that she didn't get to see Freddie grow up. But Freddie will grow up and he will be able to look back at the tributes to her, the online news articles that now live forever. He'll be able to listen back to that podcast that was so insightful and popular and that will go on to help families for years to come. And he will know that she was brilliant, and not just that she was courageous, but that she was loved by all of us who knew her and by thousands of people who never even met her.
We've seen that, Richard, in the text that we've received. This one says, "I've been trying to work out why this news has saddened me so when I didn't know her. But it's just that her brilliance made you feel like you knew her." And what you've just said is a testament to that.
Yeah, it is a testament to that. And she had an ability to kind of, and a willingness to let you into her life in a way that not many people do, and even not many people who go on air and on the radio do. And I think that she formed a very powerful connection with people, and in two just completely different ways. You know, I mentioned a moment ago through the late night show, this fan club that developed around her. And then towards the end of her life, through You, Me and the Big C, where she became very close to the audience in a very different way. And I think that is a testament to her talent.
We can speak to Richard Johnson, consultant oncoplastic surgeon at the Nightingale Breast Unit at Withenshaw Hospital in Manchester, who treated Rachel. Hello, Richard.
Hi there.
Hi. Such terribly sad news. You work very closely with Rachel. Tell us a little bit more about that experience with her.
She was just a wonderful personality. I met her around about a year ago, where she obviously needed some surgery and chemotherapy. I did various operations with her, but got to meet her several times, and Steve. And she was just very engaging, graceful lady who took it all in a stride. She had this knack of watching me very closely when I used to talk to her, and she could tell even before I opened my mouth what the news was going to be, which on most occasions wasn't particularly good, unfortunately. And you know, that vulnerability, she just held herself so well, even to the very end. Very upset for her family, Steve and little Freddie. I'm not a dissimilar age to Rachel, and have young children myself. So I am upset this morning. Yeah.
One of the charities that Rachel worked with, we spoke to earlier on, and she was talking about not just kind of demystifying the emotional experience that you will have with dealing with cancer and that your family will have as well, but also taking down the barrier of all the language that you know, you guys do your best, right? Of course you do. Yeah. But for most people, they come away and it's still going to be hard for them to actually understand exactly what's going on. But in the podcast, Rachel was just fantastic at that, just breaking it down.
Well, she was very bright. She listened to everything you said, and she could sort of, break it down into words that other people, could understand. Medics often use big, silly, long words when they're trying to sort of, in a nice way, obfuscate and not tell them necessarily, some really bad news. So, in a way, Rachel was very good at articulating that to other people. And And I guess, you know, with a job, that came quite natural.
But
to
she
her.
Actually asked you that in the podcast, didn't she? If,
she
if
did.
She was annoying because she had learned so much
well,
about this
she,
terrible
she knew,
illness.
I think she knew more about it than me at one point. But, yeah. You know, I guess you do. She was intelligent. She went away and read about it. She listened very carefully. And, you know, she wasn't daft either. She knew it wasn't a particularly nice disease that she had. But she... I know, you know, I see a lot of women with breast cancer, and it's always sad to see women at that age with breast cancer. Mm. But she dealt with it in a way that I haven't seen really for a very long time, which was quite unique and testament to her personality and the way she looked at life. So I'm sure Freddie, if he's got those genes, will thrive in the future. And with Steve, I think they'll be just fine. But I didn't know her at work professionally, as a surgeon along the way.
Why do you think we're making? You know, why do you think she's an unusual case in a sense? Because I felt when I would see her right around the office, I remember having a conversation with her in one of the food places around here. Not that long ago when her diagnosis had definitely taken a turn for the worse. And it was obvious she was kind of couching it in language in a way to make me quite aware that it wasn't looking great. And I don't find those kind of conversations particularly difficult. And maybe it's the line of work. You're kind of used to talking to people about problems they're having in life and difficulties that they might be going through. However, I don't always feel so comfortable with bringing it up with somebody else because I'm not sure how they're going to respond. If you see what I mean, so why does some people still? Why is she unusual in that respect?
It's very difficult to answer. I think there was a lot at stake for her because she was young and she obviously wanted to know a lot about the disease that she's got, the prognosis. So I think with her personality, she found it quite easy to ask questions to the medics. Number one, because some people, as you rightly point out, don't want to know. They don't want to hear, you know, your prognosis, how long you might have to live, whether or not it's spreading to other parts of your body. Rachel, I think, just took that barrier down completely, asked all the right questions pretty much every time I saw her, and was able to, you know, to say that in a blog and she talked about things like scanitis, waiting for your next scan, and all the, you know, chemo brain and all these sorts of things that people don't really talk about, but it has massive anxiety for patients, waiting for your next scan, has it come back in your liver or your lung? But Rachel just sort of, I don't know, with grace, she just accepted it all, internalized it, and then wrote about it. And that's probably what the main difference, you know, that I saw compared to, you know, other patients.
Yeah.
Today, we are going to celebrate the life of our friend, Rachel Bland, our beloved colleague, died this morning, nearly two... Somebody's just told me to dig in on the text, and that's what's got to me after all this day I've been talking about her. Our beloved colleague died this morning, nearly 2 years after she was first diagnosed with breast cancer. She was only 40.
Rachel's family have said that her death has left a huge hole that they will never be able to fill, and that her work has helped reduce the stigma around cancer and death. All of our thoughts are with her family, especially her husband Steve, her little boy Freddie, and her mum.
Yeah, Steve's been texting me today, and he, amongst other things, he just said the tributes are helping immensely, and so many people on Twitter and other forums have managed to put messages for Rachel, and please keep them coming. That's what Steve's had to say. I'll read his messages out later. Well, following her cancer diagnosis, Rachel wrote about her treatment on her award-winning blog, Big C Little Me, and appeared regularly on the show telling listeners about her illness. She then created a quite superb podcast alongside Debs and Loz, as she affectionately called them, which has been groundbreaking and has helped so many people dealing with cancer.
Here is Rachel on the podcast You, Me and the Big C, talking with typical honesty about how she felt about facing her own death.
I am not scared of actually dying. I mean, I have a vague apprehension of being in pain.
Yeah.
So it's not the actual dying process that gives me any kind of fear or concern, really. It's just the leaving people behind. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was 70 or 80 years old and I was dying and I'd lived a good life and, you know, had grandkids and my kids had grown up, then I'd be fine with it. It's just the thought of leaving Freddie behind and Steve behind and my mum behind is the only kind of... The only fearful part of it, the actual, you know, act of dying.
Well, look, no better man than you to tell us about Rachel. To tell us about how you first met.
Well, we can either start with the anecdote about how she stole my moment in history.
No, let's build up to that, because I like that one.
We can start with the anecdote. I've only found out today how she didn't even want to work with me in the first place. Shall we start there? So I joined Five Live in 2010, and Rachel was a real fixture at that point. She worked with Richard Bacon, and we've heard brilliantly from Richard earlier on Five Live. And she worked with him on their late show, and it was a huge hit, and they had this secret half-hour thing together between 12:30 and 1 at the end of the programme and all that kind of stuff. It was just a gimmick to get people to listen to the end of the show, but everyone loved it. And so I was all very jealous of their relationship. So then I was given the show because Richard was moved to afternoons. And I thought I inherited Rachel, okay? That until 2 hours ago when I bumped into the boss of Five Live in the corridor, that was how I'd always thought about it. But it turns out she inherited me and didn't really want me. She didn't know me, to be fair, at that point. But she wanted to stay with Richard, but they said, no, stay with Tony, and quite rightly, because that was my first real show on national radio. And I've already tweeted this week about how metaphorically she held my hand, and she did. She was such a... If anyone ever... We have played it before on this programme, my voice on my first ever outing on Five Live.
Hello, you're all locked in fire.
Hello, welcome to the programme. And Rachel was this anchor who I knew the listeners absolutely loved. And as far as I was concerned, I had to earn the listeners' trust because Rachel already had it. And already today, here, you and Rachel made me laugh out loud many times in the night show. I love listening to you. And other people, you know, people forget the power of radio and what she did in those night shows. And people talked about it when she left the night show. She was a voice in the wilderness to a lot of people. They were lonely. They'd lost someone themselves way before Rachel became ill. But she was the constant in their life. She'd turn up at 10, 10:30 every night and talk to them. Mm-hmm. And me and Richard tagged along.
What was it about her that impressed you most? Because I know that you're very different people, and at the beginning it used to make you laugh because you were thinking, well, she's so posh compared to me.
Well,
and you used to get her to do all this crazy stuff that she just about tolerated.
I thought, who's this posh woman they've put me with? I thought it was some kind of, I thought it was some kind of BBC prerogative that they had to have a common person with a posh person. But she was an absolute professional. I can't tell you, you know, she... I was talking to you off air today on Drive when she used to do Drive with me on a Friday. Stories would break and she could handle anything. She could handle absolutely anything. She presented up all night and things like that. But at the same time, she had this fabulous sense of humour and she could laugh at most things. And on that evening show, we made her do all kinds of things. When there was a tram crash in Coronation Street, we got the driver in of the actual tram and recreated it and made her be a passenger. And all she'd do is sit there and roll her eyes and put up with it. And then we made her into Rachel Hodgmacker and put her through a driving simulator where she screamed. We just did a lot of things with and to Rachel that she enjoyed. And she was such a rounder person and a pleasure.
But know. she always had one up on you, didn't she?
Yeah.
Right from the beginning.
But she'd tell me off.
She stymied you.
But she did, but she'd tell me off, but she was telling me. Somebody tweeted me today saying, I can still see Rachel rolling her eyes now, which is what she did about 10 times a programme. And even on Breakfast the other week when I was sitting in on Breakfast, she came in with the girls from the podcast and she was talking about it. And I must have just turned to her at one point and had a sad face. And she said, don't do that. We don't have sad face. Don't put your neck on one side and talk to me like it's a sad thing. And that's one of the other things I'll take away from Rachel, the positive way she's dealt with these 2 years of hell. She used to come in here and I'd get a regular update because that was one. First of all, she said, don't shy away from asking me how I am. Because the temptation is to put your head down and say, oh, Rachel's here, we'll do a job and all go our separate ways. So every time I saw how things, and she'd give me an update on the condition, how it had changed, her concerns, but also her determination to fight it. And towards the end, she was quite open about it. She was throwing herself at these trials because basically she knew they were her last chance. She became a willing guinea pig. And sadly, it didn't work out. And then she talked about this rash she had on her chest that was growing and she was afraid to look in the bathroom mirror. So privately, she had her moments, but publicly... you know, no better ambassador for sticking two fingers up to cancer, which I think we should all agree is quite an admirable trait.
And of course, the other thing that maybe people don't know as well, Tony, is that Steve, her husband, is former Five Live producer. Yeah. They met here.
They're a Five Live family.
Yeah.
They really are, yeah. Steve worked with many. Steve got as many friends here as Rachel, really. He chose to leave a year or two ago and go off into the commercial world, all that kind of stuff. But everyone loves him as much as they love Rachel, and that's a lot of our thoughts are there today as well, you know. And I have said, be on a completely practical basis, because many conversations we had, me and Rachel, about Freddie, you know, that was the one time, I've said this before today, but it was bears repeating, it was the one time really that she ever appeared vulnerable to me, was when we talked about Freddie. She didn't want him to be alone, and she had this conversation and she said, Steve isn't engaging with me when I want to talk about what to do with Freddie after I've gone. And I said, I'm not surprised. Who, you know, it's very difficult. And I'm thinking, if it was, I was in that position, I wouldn't want to engage either. So she was talking to other people within the family about, look, Freddie wants his shoes from this place. If he's got, do not send him out in the sunshine without any sun cream on. Yeah. Her worries were myriad. And that's, I think, when the nucleus of the idea of this writing a book for Freddie came out, that she, yes, and she's bashed off 80,000 words.
Her life story for him.
Yeah. And I said, again, without boring people, when I've talked about my mum on here before, my mum died without knowing she had cancer, and I didn't know. So I know next to nothing about my mum other than she was a loving mum. I said, write everything, Rachel. Tell him everything. Who you dislike, who you like, what you dislike. You know, just don't spare anything, because he'll devour it all as he grows up. He'll want to read every letter that she typed.
We missed out the moment where she stole your thunder as the first
speaker.
Oh,
yeah, let me just tell you that briefly.
Quickly that, and then quickly, we will have to hear this.
So you're bossing
clip
me around like she did.
Well,
now.
Well, you quickly know, you need it.
Subliminal quickly thrown in there. So in 2010, I snuck onto Five Live. We moved to Salford. That was in London at the time. We moved to Salford, and I was told, you're going to be the first voice the nation hears of Five Live when it's moved. So I thought, right, I've arrived. This is my moment to put my marker down for Five Live. Here I am, the Five Live personality. And they got a poster printed with my picture on it. He's going to be the first voice. All the big wigs came up from London, not just the bosses of Five Live, the bosses of radio, you name it. And they were all looking through this glass at me. And I kind of prepared a mini speech. And I was sat in this chair and I thought, right. And inwardly, I'm thinking, this is my moment. This is what I've been building up for in my media career. And I kind of, just as I drew breath to begin, Rachel walked straight in the studio, sat down, read the news, winked and laughed at me and walked back out again. And there she had. And officially, she was the first voice heard in Salford. Inwardly, I was seething.
The fact that she winked at you.
No, I was.
She
knew what she'd done. And I was absolutely seething. But I'll give her that moment. I'll give her that. And this is the way I'm going to remember it. And this is the laugh and the moment that's going to be in my ears whenever I sit down here and think about Rachel. So if you didn't listen to my late show, somebody called Randy must have been in the news. And we ended up talking about a US politician called Randy Bumgardner. Chaos ensued, so let's have a listen. Rachel, I'm coming to you for a Randy flash. Got Randy news.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've found the two of the best Randys.
Are these
actually
UK Randys, do we know?
No, they're both US-based Randys. Elena was the first to email this in. We've had quite a few texts since saying, yes, there is a poor guy called Randy Bumgardner. Sorry,
what?
I'm so childish. He is the general manager of Blair House, the US presidential suite.
He's called what?
Randy. I'm sorry.
I didn't quite hear it, but I know it's hyphenated.
Oh, hang on. I have to try and get this out again.
Good job you're not a teacher reading the register out. You'd have a bit of an issue.
I know. Okay, his name is Randy Bumgardner.
Randy Bum... What? Just make the noise if you can't say it.
I can't. Gardner.
Gardner?
Yes.
Randy Bumgar?
Yes.
No, it's not what his parents were thinking of, it's what his ancestors were thinking of. You thought someone would... And yeah, also, like, you know, when names are after, like Taylor, after the job they did when they were young. Anyway, so we've got Randy Bumgarner. Don't say you've got another one, have you?
I have got another one. I'm just going to try and compose myself. Yeah. Douglas in Glasgow. You might have to come back to me. I'm sorry. Go for the naked story. Come back.
There we are, Rachel. Did you notice then during that item she told me off? It's so childish, she said, and that's what she was like. She kind of judged you but didn't and joined in. Oh, Rachel Bland.
Let's open the programme tonight by hearing how some of Five Live's presenters, past and present, and our controller too, have been remembering Rachel. To the soundtrack of one of Rachel's favourite songs, we'll hear from Tony, from Nihal, from Richard Bacon, from Rachel Burden, our boss Jonathan Wall, and first, Chris Warburton, who had to announce the news earlier today.
Good morning. It's now 11 o'clock and this is Chris Warburton on Five Live. And I'm afraid I've got some very sad news to bring you. And the news is that our beloved colleague, Five Live presenter and newsreader, Rachel Bland, has died this morning, nearly 2 years after she was first diagnosed with breast cancer. Rachel leaves behind her husband, Steve, and her young son, Freddie.
When I started doing this show on my own back in February, she was the first newsreader to come in, and she was set to be my regular newsreader. And yeah, it was a real privilege sitting next to her. She's so professional. She's so good at what she did. Just used to sit here just thinking, good grief, look at the confidence. She walks in here and she just sits down, keyboard, screen, words, 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 words. Never tripped up. A single word. Never, not one mistake did I hear her do when she was sitting here reading the news next to me.
She was authoritative, she was warm, she was an intrinsically likeable person, and perhaps as important as anything in this gig, my experiences with her as well, she was just a genuine great laugh as well when the microphones were off and we were just able to talk to each other.
In her own right, she was a great broadcaster, but more than that, I honestly think she's brought the most important pieces of broadcasting about cancer and living with cancer that I've ever heard. It became a more profound piece of work when she knew she was going to die, because I think for her, the bravery, the great bravery in it is confronting a taboo subject that she said, we're all going to die, but we don't talk about it. And the danger of that is we left things unsaid. We don't say what we want to say to the people we should say it to. And I think to do the finest work of your life in the final year of your life is an amazing thing to do.
She really did, I think, kind of cut loose and find her own voice and open up a conversation that other people perhaps could not find the right words for, but she managed to, and she did it in a really brave and bold way.
She was funny, she was confident, she was clever, she was also very tough, and that's something that you saw when this final challenge was thrown at her. And one of the most interesting things about Rachel, actually, I think, is that, you know, that when this happened, she actually created, I think, the best thing that she's ever done, the best piece of work she's ever done, which is the podcast. But I also don't know how she did it. I don't know how she found the strength and ability to confront this in such an open and frank way and with such humour. And I really do think of her as being an absolutely remarkable person.
I'm going to laugh my way through this because she told me to. She said, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. As in her words, I'm not frightened of death. I'm just frightened of what I'm leaving behind. So we need to smile to help those people she's left behind. She's inspired millions of people in these last few months. And for that, well, what more legacy could she want?
Just a few of the many Five Live voices who've been remembering Rachel today with a little help from one of her favourite songs, All These Things That I've Done by The Killers. Lizzie Lamb just this second dropped in and the hundreds of messages on Twitter. The thing about radio is the presenters end up feeling like friends. I cried at work today over a woman I've never met. My heart breaks for her family, but they should be so proud of her bravery and dignity and the life that she lived.
Yeah, thanks for all your messages today. While we were just hearing those voices there, I've just written something down, so here's how I'm going. To end, to the beautiful Rachel Hodges stroke Bland, for the laughs, for the chats, for the skill, for the hand-holding, for the tolerance, for the eye-rolling, for the love, on behalf of the listeners, of all of us here at Five Live, We will never forget you.
How do you feel of listening to that, Rach?
Do you know what, guys? I'm not even gonna lie, I've called Deborah Rachel how many times in the last 48 hours? Apologise, mate. I've been doing it. But yeah, those words, I think it's so nice to hear the very different role she played in so many different people's lives.
Yeah. And she's making me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, just listening to some of the stuff is amazing.
Do you remember when she told us the story the other day about the Mercury Music Prize and how writing XX on a running order as a placeholder until they get a name?
Oh, yeah.
But the winner was the XX. And she kept saying, we've got the winner of the Mercury Music Prize. Oh, no, we don't. And everyone was like, Rachel, it's the XX.
So funny.
Yeah, like, she's just an incredibly brilliant woman, and thank you to everyone who's been sending in so many tributes. I could only speak on behalf of us guys here and how grateful we are to hear them all. I know that Steve, Freddie and her mum and brother are also incredibly grateful too.
Absolutely. So on that note, unfortunately, it's quite emotional. I kind of just want to stay here today. I think it just reminds me of Rach, to be honest with you. But on that note, thank you for downloading. And we are going to be back next week with an episode that we pre-recorded with Rach not too long ago. And we really want you to continue to rate, to share, to spread the word of our podcast, and to tweet us and to tell us what you want moving forward. And then after next week's episode, we're going to be taking a short break, just so we can figure out how we move forward with this. But we are going to be back, aren't we, Loz?
We are, and we're taking our Rach with us.
One thing that we are all in agreement with is that we will always end this podcast including Rachel. Thanks for downloading the You, Me and the Big C podcasts.
Don't forget to click subscribe
or get more great podcasts from 5 Live at bbc.co.uk/podcasts.